From the heart of rural France, this is the Keto Woman podcast, brought to you by me. Hello, keto lovelies. I'm Daisy Brackenhall, and I've spent most of my life struggling with my weight and confidence, and have always had a difficult relationship with food. Even when I finally got to my target weight after weight loss surgery and eating low carb, I couldn't maintain it and I was miserable. I've been keto now for over 2 years and it has given me the freedom to fall in love with food again without the constant gain, loss, guilt, virtue cycle of before. Health and happiness is where it's at now, running on fat. Welcome to the Keto Woman podcast. Each week I'll be chatting to inspirational women, maybe even the odd man, to discover the secrets to their success so that I can share them with you. So what is keto? Keto is a way of eating that enables you to switch your body's main fuel source from sugar to fat. Who doesn't want to be a fat burner, right? But how do we achieve this? A great place to start is by keeping carbs under 20 grams a day. So things like leafy greens and above ground vegetables, plus some nuts and seeds and the incidental carbs you find in things like full fat dairy. Choose delicious fatty proteins and be free and easy with oily dressings on salad and butter on your veggies. Once you're in the swing of things, you can tweak it to suit you. Make your own personalized keto. You'll hear all sorts of ways to keto from my guests. There is no one way to do keto, no one size fits all. I hope to show you just how flexible and fabulous this way of eating can be. I'm not a doctor, and most of my guests won't be either, so we really can't give you medical advice. It's always best to consult your own doctor when making big changes to your diet and lifestyle, because they know you and your medical history, and so have access to the bigger picture. Wouldn't it be helpful to have one place where you could find all the links? Want to sign up to my new Patreon-exclusive Facebook group, Daisy's Lovelies? No problem. How about subscribing to my YouTube channel? Please help me notch up my first 1,000 subscribers by going to links.ketowomanpodcast.com and following the YouTube link. Not following me on Instagram yet? Hit the Instagram button. You get the idea. All the buttons, all the links you need are at links.ketowomanpodcast.com. Welcome to episode number 158 and part two of my chat with extraordinary woman Kelly Canuetto. If you haven't already, do go back and listen to last week's episode to catch the first part of Kelly's story. We left you on a bit of a cliffhanger, so now you get to find out what happened next, as well as the rest of Kelly's powerful story of how she fought fibromyalgia and won. You will hear from Kelly how common it is for people to get pretty angry when first hearing this information for all sorts of reasons, and indeed, so angry they might drop an F-bomb or two. So here's a heads up that there's another swear in this episode. I want you to know though that if this is you, if you're feeling angry at me or Kelly or the world at large when you're trying to digest this information, it's okay. It's a normal reaction. Just bookmark it for another time and you'll know when the time is right and you can come back and listen then. Probably best not to throw your device at a wall or something though. Maybe just swear very loudly at me. If you think any of what Kelly shares sounds familiar to your own struggles, then I hope this becomes a starting point for you too to finally start getting some answers and planning your own recovery. The show notes are jam-packed with resources, and I will also be adding other people's stories as I get them and the things they've found helpful as time goes on. So do please come back and check these out, as hopefully it will be a great hub of information. The link will be in the description on your podcatcher, but you can also simply go directly to the page, which will be at ketowomanpodcast.com/158.
A number of people recommend this doctor in New York called Dr. Sarno, and so she goes to see him, follows his method, completely recovers to the point where she can run again. Wow. It's like miraculous. And you see all these stories and I'm thinking, wow, this is super exciting. I watch the video. I'm like, oh my God, yes, this is me. I buy the book. I read it. I have to read it 3 times. It's a tiny book, so packed full of information. But what occurs to me is that what Dr. Sarno is saying is very similar to what I'd learned in the Mickle therapy course. What Dr. Sarno's theory was based on a study showing that the correlation between people being in pain and what shows up on their MRI scans is completely misleading. There was a study with around 1,000 people without pain. They all have MRIs, and when the doctors look at the scans, around 60% of these people should have been in pain, but weren't. Hmm. And then doctors, you know, have patients that have MRI scans with nothing, no abnormality showing, no herniated disc, no bulging disc, no scoliosis, you know, no pinched nerves, but they're in incredible pain. So how comes all of these things can appear in people with no pain? How can that be a method of diagnosis that is reliable? So what Dr. Sarno calls them is normal abnormalities, and says that after the age of 40, scan anybody and they're going to show some deterioration. You know, over 40, most people have got some grey hairs. It doesn't mean, you know, that you should be in pain. Oh, okay, so this is making sense to my MRI with no abnormalities, but I have pain, MRI with abnormalities, but also with pain. So I'm instantly hooked by this fact.
Yeah, and it's appealing to that strong sense of logic that we both have, actually. Something's got to make sense.
Yeah.
If it doesn't make sense, it's like, no, there's something fishy going on here. You don't necessarily know what it is, but it's not right.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, one of the biggest things is the personality type. He said that all of the patients coming to him with chronic pain seem to have this same kind of personality he calls type C or type tension. And that's the conscientious, perfectionist, people pleaser type. And he says that these people tend to repress their feelings, especially, you know, anger, frustration, resentment, guilt, shame, grief. We push it down and, you know, carry on being the perfect, driven people we are, pleasing everybody around us. And that this kind of level of perfectionism creates a self-induced stress, because we can never live up to the expectations of others or even the expectations we put on ourselves, because nothing we do ever feels good enough. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I relate. And then he goes on with like more things to back up his theory, which is like this thing called the age of responsibility. So if back pain is due to deterioration, well, it can be knee pain, elbow pain, really pain anywhere in the body. If it's due to deterioration, then surely as the population ages, the chart for back pain, knee pain, it should go up.
Mm.
But he found that it wasn't just going up. It was a really like a hump, which was like between the ages of 30 and 60 was when most people suffered from the chronic pain. And after 60, it kind of tailed off. It was like, okay, so what's happening in those years? So 30 to 60, you're at the height of your career, you've got a mortgage, you've probably got children, a marriage, maybe you're going through divorces, you know, your parents are getting older, maybe you need to look after them. Life's a lot more complicated. You know, you have a lot more stress. So if stress is inducing, you know, the fight or flight kind of state in our bodies, as you know, it can divert oxygen away from the extremities of the body into the organs that need it the most. And quite possibly, the reason we had such tight muscles that were causing us so much pain could just be from the mild oxygen deprivation caused by constantly being tense.
Hmm.
And I was like, okay, right, this is also resonating with me. And really, finally, the thing that I super connected with was physical phobia. We become afraid of causing damage, fear of re-injury, fear of even moving, because anybody who's had a bad back will know that kind of feeling when you bend over and you suddenly have a twinge and you panic because you're like, oh no, my back's going to go out. And you can just start to completely live in fear of, oh, I can't do this because that's going to hurt me. I can't move like that. I can't bend. I can't sit. And you just become afraid, and that fear adds into the stress. And what might feel like, you know, the pain is very much in your back, what Dr. Sarno explains is that actually the problem isn't at the site where you're feeling the pain. The problem is being created by faulty wiring in the brain. So if we think about the physical pain center in the brain and the emotional pain center in the brain, and think of them as neighbors, if you've been stuffing down your emotional pain for years and years, all your frustration, resentments, grief into this bucket, there gets a point in your life where that bucket is full and it starts, you know, spilling over. And so your emotional pain starts hijacking the neural pathways for physical pain. And so your repressed emotions start causing back pain, knee pain, tennis elbow, carpal tunnel syndrome, chronic headaches, chronic migraines, you know, anything chronic muscle tension related. It can also cause irritable bowel syndrome, is another really common effect of this mind-body syndrome. Mm-hmm. And if we can deal with the underlying emotions and relieve some of this emotional tension within us, then the pain will disappear. And I was like, really? Is this possible? Like, all I need to do is like get these feelings out and I'm going to be free of pain.
Empty that bucket.
Yeah.
Or at least get some of it out.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to accept at first because you know, the pain feels very much not in your head.
Well, of course it isn't. That's the thing. And that's, I think that's why everyone gets defensive if you start mentioning things like it's something is psychosomatic or there's any kind of implication that you've basically brought it on yourself. Your brain has caused the problems. It's you straight away jump to blame and shame. And
yeah,
those of course are really places none of us want to be in.
A lot of people who read the book say at that point they just threw the mm-hmm. book across the room or were like, fuck you, Dr. Sarno. Like, but then would later go back and read it, you know, and be cured. When it comes to like reoccurring pain, often at the site of old injuries, the reason for this is because when there's an injury, a neural pathway is established at the time of the injury to communicate between the injury and the brain. So when your emotional pain starts overflowing into the physical pain part of the brain.
Ah, it's got a ready-made pathway.
Exactly. It's the easiest route for it to take. And so that's why, you know, maybe you hurt your knee playing, you know, football, soccer, college, and it's always been a problem. Or like me, the whiplash, it never gets better.
And it also makes sense logically, because you can use that as a more palatable reason.
Yeah, absolutely. I like to think of it like this, which is if you've got a burglar alarm in your house and the alarm keeps going off in like a downstairs room, but you go to it and there's no intruder, the problem is not in that room. The problem is being caused by the control panel, which is the brain. So if you can reset that control panel of your brain, then the alarm won't keep going off in that room in your house. It's not saying that the pain isn't real. The pain is, I mean, the pain is so real. But the solution is not in physio, you know, it's not in special leg braces or back braces or, you know, special pillows. It's actually when it gets to this point of chronic or chronically reoccurring pain, then the solution can be to deal with switching off these neural pain pathways in the mind by dealing with our feelings. And this can be really difficult because as somebody who copes with life by suppressing their feelings, suddenly the thought of opening up that Pandora's box of feelings is utterly terrifying. And really it takes what I call the gift of desperation, where you've tried everything and you're in such suffering and so desperate that you're like, okay, right, Dr. Sarno, I'm going to put my faith in you and I'm going to give your method a try.
So would you say we're building this picture of how important emotional trauma is and how often there is actually some kind of physical trauma that kind of starts the ball rolling in a much more tangible way, if you like. But that more often or not, these are traumas that go right back, probably to childhood.
Before we jump to that point, what I think is, like, it's not always even necessary, like, probably like 2/3 of people who read the book, they never even need to go back into their childhoods. This is very much about managing your day-to-day relationships with your boss, your partner, your mother, your children, and managing the, like, the day-to-day stresses.
All right. So it's not necessarily a history, because what I was thinking was maybe this was like a sort of ancient history priming you, as it were, but that's not necessarily the case at all.
Well, yes. What it is your kind of your childhood is where you develop your kind of personality style. Oh. And it's in childhood that you develop.
And that's the important crux of it, is this whole personality style is the important bit that gets developed early on, that is a crucial part of the jigsaw.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ah, interesting.
So for the majority of people, they don't need to go back and, you know, rake over the coals of their early life. Simply accepting that they have this personality type and this concept that the pain could be being created as a false alarm in the brain rather than a real injury at the site, no matter, you know, how real it feels. I mean, there's the phantom limb syndrome really backs up this theory, where people who've had a lower leg amputated still feel an itchy foot. You know, these sensations are caused in the brain even when the limb is no longer there. So it's a convincing argument. For me personally, you know, I really had it bad and I needed to go back and have a bit of therapy and talk about events in early childhood. But the first steps I took to recovering were literally walking to the end of my street. So at this time I was in severe pain and every step I took hurt. And this is probably like 100 feet to the end of my street. And I'm just taking every step thinking, Dr. Sarno, I'm putting my faith in you that this is going to work.
And another personality trait you have is that we share is that you're stubborn as a mule when you decide you're going to be. So that helps, I think, in this case.
Yeah, I think it's that determination that I have kind of got me into this mess, but it also was what got me out of it. And I had nothing to lose at this point. It was like I was already living the life of a disabled person.
Why not?
I couldn't really get much worse.
Well, and to be fair, you'd already put your faith in so many different people. Well, you know, what's one more to add to the list? Why not? Let's go with something completely different and try that.
I think it was more than that. It was just, this felt like, oh my God.
Could be the answer.
These two people, Dr. Mickle, Dr. Sarno, like they've described what's going on for me in a way I've never heard before. And I fit this personality type to a T. So I just had an inkling.
They were actually hearing you.
Yeah. And it made sense. The science behind it made sense to me. So I put all my faith in this little old man and took one step after another. And it hurt, and I just kept going. And I learned to meet the pain with indifference. So when you stop reacting with fear to the pain, this is where you can turn off what's called the danger alarm signal in the brain. And while Dr. Sarno was really ahead of his time, you know, coming up with this in like the 80s, neuroscience and neuroplasticity kind of studies now really back this up, that we can affect the brain through thought. So I would just tell myself that it's safe to move. This pain is not dangerous. It's a red herring. You can move. And so each day I walked a little bit further and a little bit further. And as I became to fear less, the pain dropped away. And not only did the pain drop away, but my energy levels seemed to rise. And it was like, holy crap, I'm getting better. I couldn't quite believe it. I was still so afraid, but I just kept going a little bit further every day. And then I bought a bike and I started going out on my bike. And I mean, it was pathetic the first time I went out. I think I'd been riding for about 5 minutes before I had to stop because I'm going to be sick. So much exercise. But it was like I'd come from such a, you know, a kind of bad place that to be able to cycle for 5 minutes was incredible for me. And over the last 5 years, I've just built on it and built on it and built on it and expanded my boundaries. It's not always been easy because life happens and there is stress and I still have my family and, you know, all their, you know, all the family issues that families have. So I'd buy a bike because I used to love riding a bike. And also it's quite a nice, happy, childish pursuit. It's fun, isn't it? More fun than walking. And I start to go to a Zumba class. The first time I go, I literally do 2 songs in the whole hour. Do 1 song, then I sit and I watch everybody, and then I do another one in the second half. And each week I go back and I add in an extra song. And it really helped me a lot because when you're, I'm not a natural dancer, let's just say that. But when you're having to concentrate on like, am I going left, right, forward, back? There's no time to be worrying about, oh God, can I move my limb this way? Like, you're kind of so busy thinking about where you're going that you can't be worrying about, am I going to hurt myself?
It's one of the reasons they say it's one of the best forms of exercise, actually, because it is so engaging. It engages you not only physically, but mentally and usually socially as well. So you've really got, you know, you're getting all the benefits. You're ticking all those boxes, actually, from a positive form of exercise.
Yeah.
It really does hit all the boxes.
Yeah, there's something that is it Kelly McGonigal talks about in the Joy of Movement book. That's about right. Collective joy and
music and engagement.
Yeah, since lockdown I've noticed that, you know, dancing on my own at home is not like, you know, we did some online classes. It's just not the same as when you're dancing with a group of people. You know, there is an extra joy to it.
Yeah, apparently there's also something. And this comes in with not just forms of dance and line dancing, but also things like, you know, marching and anything that is a collective synchronized movement. Apparently there's something that clicks in your brain with that synchronized movement with other people, even just like running. One of the reasons why something like park run, where everyone runs together, when you're all doing the same movement, apparently there's something with that that lights up the right receptors in the brain as well. It's very, very interesting.
It's true. Like the pre-race energy that you feel. My husband's a runner, so he's done quite a few races over the years. And, you know, if you've ever been to like a big sports event, like the energy, you feel it from the crowd, even without the movement. There's, you know, something kind of quite nice about that part. But yeah, I just started to move my body without fear. That was so important in switching off this alarm signal in my brain that was misfiring. But then I had to deal with the emotional stress bucket that was overloaded. And what's recommended by Dr. Sarno and all the people who, subsequent to his passing away, prescribe is something called journaling. It's no dear diary, let's put it that way. This is it's a method called journal speak that Nicole Sachs, an ex-patient of Dr. Sarno, is a big proponent of. And if your pages are all looking like they're written very nicely, then you're not doing it right. There should be like scribbles, F-bombs, you know, it should be kind of like wild and abandoned. And often I would find that I'd start writing, you know, politely and about what'd been going on in my week. And then suddenly I'd remember something that happened and I start furiously writing. And I'm like, where did all that come from? I was so used to just glossing over things that had annoyed me and, you know, moving on, letting it go, as they say, that I was letting things go before I'd actually processed them and felt them. I needed to start to feel all of my feelings, not just the nice, happy, fluffy feelings, but I had to feel all of the frustration, rage, annoyance, sadness. Things happen in life. It's not all just a happy love fest.
That's an interesting point, actually, about journaling in general, that your approach can be, well, you know, I can't be bothered to do it because I haven't got anything major to put in there. And maybe you will journal when you feel like you've got something to write about. But it sounds like the important aspect of it for you had been, and I can really see the benefit of this, is that you do just start with the repeated practice, not worrying about that you haven't got anything to say and embracing the possible mundanity of it, but do it for, there's probably, and I have heard other people speaking about this actually, that you sort of set yourself a minimum time that you're just going to write stuff down, however boring it is, because there's a point that you go across that, as you've just said, or that stuff pours out that you'd forgotten about, or you haven't been thinking about, or it wasn't something that you were going to write down because you didn't realize how much it annoyed you until you started writing, and then you're starting to scribble, and then you're starting to jump around, and that's when the important part of the process happens and it spills out. But unless you give yourself a chance, unless you give your brain a chance to let that come out, especially if you're used to repressing your feelings, you kind of maybe have to go through that potentially boring daily practice element of it just to allow that flow to come.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly the perfect way to describe it. And you know, sometimes you'll be journaling about what's happening in your day, your week. Other times it might be more about things that happened in your past. Mm. It just depends if you've got some, you know, adverse childhood experiences that you had never dealt with, never really spoken about. Or maybe you didn't even realise that your childhood was kind of a bit dysfunctional at the time. Mm. But now as an adult looking back, you can say, oh, hold on a minute, that doesn't seem quite right. You may need to go back and reinvestigate how you feel about it and get that pain out of your body and onto the page. So I found it really therapeutic. To begin with, I did it every day, sometimes twice a day, 20 minutes, and that's what's recommended. But you get to a point where you're recovered, you're not in pain. And occasionally you might have a pain flare up. And now, rather than me thinking, oh, something's gone wrong in my body, I actually see it as an alarm system telling me, you've got some feelings, you're feeling something here.
Mm. What is it?
That you're pushing down. Mm. Get the pad out, start writing. And generally, it will resolve super quick. Sometimes it might take a few days to, you know, really get to the nitty gritty for the pain to go. But I've seen miraculous things happen with journaling in regards to symptom relief. I mean, there's one question I ask myself when I rarely get a migraine. This one question has changed my life. And it's, what would I like to say to somebody if I wasn't afraid to? And generally, once I have the answer to that, the migraine will resolve itself. And that's really shown me a lot about how powerful our suppressed emotions can be, that they can induce a migraine, which, you know, can be super painful and debilitating.
Mm.
So really, it was a miraculous recovery that I'm so incredibly grateful to have had. And then people started to hear about it, and friends of friends would say, I've got a friend who's been diagnosed with fibromyalgia, or I've got a friend who's had wrist pain, he's had an operation but it's never got better. So I started kind of sharing the work with other people, and in my mind I kind of thought, well, maybe I'm a bit of a fluke that this happened to me. But then I saw other people recovering, and it was amazing. I was like, this works. Like, it really, really works. And there's a website called Thank You Dr. Sarno, where people who've been, you know, cured by reading his book and following his method leave their stories. It's a great place to go for inspiration.
Mm.
And, you know, people have healed from all sorts of things, like tinnitus and irritable bowel and all sorts of different pain conditions and chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia. So it's a really good resource. I mean, even just the Amazon reviews for his books are like a source of inspiration. I remember reading them and just like crying tears of relief when I came across a story similar to mine. It just gave me hope that I could be better at a time when I really needed it. So that to me is like why sharing my recovery story is something that I decided to do with you today. Even though I'm a very shy person, I decided to overcome my nerves and share with you the details of my recovery.
And we've seen this in action with a now shared friend. It's actually the person who got me into keto in the first place, who was diagnosed with fibro and was slightly resistant to what you shared, but then she dropped her defences and had another pretty miraculous recovery. So it is something that is repeatable in a fairly reliable way, actually.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what is wonderful about this work, but also a reason why it's not been widely shared by doctors and surgeons, is that it's really cheap. The book is probably like $10. The audiobook I'd highly recommend. It's only 3 hours long. You could change your life in 3 hours of listening to this book.
Afternoon.
You know, you're told no more physical therapy. I don't need all the expensive supplements I was taking. It saved me a fortune, I have to say, as well as giving me back my life, but not only giving me back my life, but like giving me a life that I never imagined was possible. And tomorrow I'm going to run my first ever 10K.
Wow, tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow.
And impressive.
You know me from our school days. It's like I was allergic to PE. Mm-hmm. I always had a note to say that I was going to be, you know, excused. Now, I found it humiliating. I was not a sports person.
Same.
But having been in a position where I, you know, had the ability to use my body so severely limited, when I regained that, it was just such a joy to move it and to be able to go on lovely walks, to go dancing, you know, go running. It was like, it just felt amazing, so freeing. And also there was a part of me that I needed to get over the physical phobia that happened when that doctor said to me, oh, well, you know, if that narrows, you could be paralyzed.
Mm.
And so every time I went running, I was afraid. I was afraid that I would damage myself, I would re-injure myself. But I knew that this whole theory was bullshit and that I had to let go of that fear in order to be free. And it's taken me, you know, a full 5 years, but I can run 5K now. And 5 years ago, you know, walking 100 feet to the end of my street was like climbing Everest. So yeah, pretty remarkable.
It really is. And obviously I'm biased, but yeah, I'm very proud of you and very in awe of what you've accomplished and very thankful that you're happy to share your story. And I think, you know, we kicked off by saying that this is not keto related, but actually listening to you talking just then, it shares one of the biggest things that I think is at the crux of keto for me, and what I love about it so much is this feeling of empowerment that it gives so many people, that when they take back control of at least part of their health, especially often in the face of the medical establishment telling them that they have a progressive disorder of some kind, type 2 diabetes, for example. You know, this is only going to progress. It's going to get worse. There's nothing you can do about it. Well, actually, I can.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and they find the science behind it and it all starts making sense. And they realize that they can. And the solution is cheap. Yes, of course, it can cost you money. You can do programs. You can do this. You can spend a fortune on food if you want to, but you don't have to. That's the point. And
yeah,
the beauty of the world these days is that there are so many resources, some free, some paid, whatever, but a lot of them either free or very cheaply available, for you to be able to take back control.
Yeah.
And I think that's where it shares so much actually with keto, and I think will appeal to the mentality, the personality type that I see so dominant in the keto world.
Yeah. What incentive is there for doctors and surgeons to reduce our dependency on medication and surgery when there's so much money to be made from it?
Mm.
You know, there is a conflict of interest in that industry, which not all doctors fall prey to, but many.
Mm.
You know, and who's funding the medical studies? Usually pharmaceutical companies. So to find funding to back up a doctor's theory that, you know, feeling your feelings and moving without fear could cure you of chronic pain. Like, there's no money to be made from a theory like that. So who's going to pay to do, you know, the double blind studies necessary to bring it into the mainstream?
That's right.
But, you know, the one thing about social media now is like more and more people are sharing the work of Dr. Sarno. More and more recovered people are becoming coaches and helping people through the process. And every person that has recovered has bought a number of books and given them to people. Even if that person has thrown them across the room and said, this is rubbish, then picked it up a year later and said, hold on a minute, maybe I'll give this another read.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you do become a little bit evangelical.
Understandably so.
Yes.
Especially when you see someone in a similar position to where you were, and you're not saying the solution is easy, but it's possible, it's doable.
Yeah. And some people out there like me who are at a point of desperation, who'd run out of all of the options apart from, you know, life on medication, they need help when doctors don't have the answers.
So what would you say to somebody, because, you know, I actually have potentially a few people in mind. I can picture them. I can see their posts on Facebook in my mind. I can hear their words, how helpless they are, that they're in that place you're talking about where they're probably spending a lot of money, a lot of effort in the latest gadget, in the latest food, in the latest whatever it is, that this might be the thing that's going to help. And it's flare up after flare up or whatever. They just see no end in sight. You know, it's FU fibro, whatever it is. This is the thing I have hanging over me that I can't do anything about. People aren't listening to me. People don't believe me. When will somebody listen? When will somebody help? If they're feeling helpless, hopeless, broke.
Broke and broken.
Yeah. Where do they start? I mean, hopefully they've started by listening to you here today, but what are those first small steps they can take, even if they take them, discard them, and have to wait a while before they come back to them? Where would you suggest is the best place just to start chipping away?
I'd say the very first place to start is this short, I think it's 13-minute video from you know, the news report in 2020 about Dr. Sarno and how it's helped people. That to me was the real kind of light bulb moment where I was like, hold on, this could be me. And from there, one of Dr. Sarno's books is on audiobook, only 3 hours long. That would be the next kind of stage. And while, you know, there's a lot of information and it can take some unpacking, just be patient, you know, read 15 minutes a day if that's all you can handle.
And if it's only 3 hours in total, you can, this is something you can keep repeating as well. You don't have to feel like you've got to digest it all in one go.
Yeah, start reading some, you know, some of the reviews of Dr. Sarno's books. You need to like build the belief that this could work for me too.
Hear from real people.
It's very hard when you've had, as I call it, the voodoo curse of the doctor's, you know, diagnosis, which when somebody tells you you've got something and you'll never get better, you've got to completely change your opinion and think, well, there are people out there who are getting better, so what have they done? Let me follow in their footsteps. And I'll give you some links to some like helpful books, some helpful kind of YouTube channels, and just start investigating and thinking, does this sound like the personality type that I've got? And could this work for me? And just try it one step at a time, even if it is just, you know, like me, it took me 5 years, but it was definitely worth it.
Yeah, and the show notes are going to be a great resource in this case. They always are, obviously. But they're going to be jam-packed this week.
One of the things of when you're so desperate to heal, you're in a state of desperation. You're not in a state of healing. Mm. So while there's like such a desire, you know, and I say that, you know, really the chronic fatigue, fibro kind of situation differs very much from depression, whereas when you're depressed, all you want to do is stay in bed, potentially. Whereas when you've got CFS fibro, it's like you're in bed, but all you want to do is get out of that bed. You are desperate, and that desperation can actually be very stress-inducing. Mm. So give yourself permission for your recovery to take as long as it needs. You know, ingest the material in manageable chunks. If you've got the brain fog and you can only manage 5 minutes, watch a 5-minute video. You know, hear a recovery story. Hope is going to get you out of that hole. Mm. It certainly did for me.
Just read one review. Perhaps that's your goal. I'm going to read one review every day for a week.
Exactly.
And then next week I'll do something else.
Yeah, absolutely. Just start small and keep building.
And what was that question? There was a question you were telling me about that was a really good one to ask yourself. And I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was along the lines of, what are you afraid will happen if you lose the fibro? What happens? What is this condition actually serving you? So it was along those lines.
Oh, yeah. It was, what am I afraid will happen if I get better?
That's it. Yeah.
And for me, it was like I was trapped in a work situation with my mother that I didn't want to be in. And I had to finally say, I'm sorry, but I can't carry out this role in the business for you anymore. Even though I felt very much it was my duty to be doing it, I literally had to say, I can't do that for you anymore. And you know, learning to say no to people was so hard. But I knew my health depended on it, my life depended on it. And eliminate any reason there might be for your illness protecting you from being in a situation you don't want to face. It was like the illness was saying no to my mother because I couldn't.
Mm.
And yeah, that was letting go of my shoulds and my musts. It's like, I should help my mother. I must help her. I must help her run the family business. I gave myself permission to put my needs first for a while. And it's recommended to do that for 6 months. So I said, I can't help run the family business for 6 months. And then when I saw how my life had transformed in that 6 months, I could then really see how important it had been for me to remove myself from that role that I was very unhappy in, and to be a kind of stronger in my resolve to say, actually, this is not what I want to choose to do with my life, even if it's inconvenient for you. So yeah, that was a big one. Yeah, learning to say no to people. It's the people pleasers' worst nightmare.
Goes against everything. It strikes me, actually, it's just making me think. It's making me think of the kind of therapy I had for a while and some of my own things, and remembering that basically your body is designed not to work against you. It's designed to work for you. It's designed to protect you. And actually, if you start thinking about some of these things that take over your life as a protective mechanism gone a bit wrong, it sometimes starts making a lot of sense, actually. You know, why did I spend 2 decades pretty much twice the size I am now? What purpose was that fat serving? What purpose was the depression serving me, keeping me at home? And actually, when you start to unpack it, there are some very, very good reasons why your body started behaving in that way. And it started off as a protective mechanism. Like you just said, by your body shutting you down, it's protecting you because it's stopping you from doing something that's causing you harm.
Yeah.
The trouble is, it just spirals a bit out of control and it ends up being something that's harmful in and of itself. I think one of the important messages actually that comes to me from this is that you need to find a way to get yourself to a place where actually you start allowing your body to put itself right, to heal itself, because that's what it's designed to do. It's complicated, but you've actually got to start removing these blocks, removing these. What are these things? What is this thing that I've been diagnosed with? How is it serving me? And that sounds like a bizarre question to ask, but I think if you really think hard about it, it probably is in some way serving you.
Yeah. And if you were my doctor saying that to me, you know, like 10 years ago, I probably would have wanted to have punched you in the face.
Justifiably so. Don't be ridiculous.
It's really confronting, but having been like, how dare you? Mm. I'm not causing this, but I like to think of the, you know, the symptoms now had a message for me, which was telling me things in my life were out of balance. And I just wasn't listening. So the symptoms had to get louder and louder and louder until I could break through the shell and become a bit more of a feisty woman.
Just like the doctors weren't listening to you, you weren't listening to your body.
Indeed, yeah.
Wow. Well, there's a lot there that I think certainly some people I can think of specifically are going to find useful, but hopefully a lot of people out there, you know, this is why I do what I do and why I get people like you on the show to share your stories, because podcasting does feel like a very intimate space. This has certainly felt like an intimate conversation. They kind of always do. And it's one of the reasons why I like them. It's to have people in my ears, especially somebody I listen to every week. It feels very intimate. It feels like they're talking to me. And I think that's a good space, a good private space, if you've got your earbuds in, for just you to be listening, just you to be hearing this, and for us to be speaking directly to you. And maybe it's going to be enough for you to take that first little step.
Yeah, I hope people out there have heard something that they connect with, and it could spark a healing journey for some of your listeners. That would be the best thing ever.
It would. So we're at that point in the show where you leave everyone with a top tip.
Okay, what the hell am I going to say as my top tip?
I know. It's going to have to be your toppest tip, because you've shared quite a few.
My tippy toppiest tip. Okay. I think learning that the antidote to stress isn't always less stress, and sometimes the antidote to stress is adding more fun into your life. When you're having fun, you're in the flow state, and that's when your body can fall into the healing state. So more fun for everyone. That's my prescription.
I like that, and it's very, very you. I like the fact that you just take a slightly different perspective. You're not trying to get rid of the stress. You're not trying to heal it. You're not trying to fix it. You just add something else in. And by doing that, it's almost like a distraction technique that the thing you're trying to solve will naturally just start falling away. And what better way to do it than with some fun?
Yeah, everybody loves fun.
They do.
And yeah, we all have our own, our own things that bring us joy and that we find fun to do.
Exactly.
Listening to music or, painting, or if you're lucky enough to be talented in that area.
And I think it's a good excuse, actually, if someone has said to you, this is a way you can start fixing yourself. Hey, Kelly and Daisy said the way I need to start fixing myself is to do something fun. So it gives you permission to do something fun, to do something silly, to do something that you thought you might fancy doing, but you haven't wanted to say to your family, well, hey, I want to do this weekend.
Yeah.
Well, this is kind of like a prescription now. So this is what we're going to do.
Even if it's like you've ever fancied trying a bit of needlepoint.
Exactly. Anything you like.
Yeah, making things, anything like creative, or even if it's just bopping around to a few of, your kind of favourite tracks from your teenage years.
That's always fun, isn't it? Getting on YouTube or something, and you start with one, and before you know it, you've spent 3 hours going through all the suggestions that come up. Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, the best thing about running for me is time to listen to music I love. There's no better mood-altering substance in the world than music.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Kelly. It has been an enormous pleasure. Thank you for sharing your time, sharing your feelings, being brave enough to be vulnerable.
Oh, and likewise, it was a bit scary opening up, but I felt very safe with you, and thank you so much for letting me share my story.
You're welcome. And I'm so glad you didn't reveal any of my teenage secrets.
Likewise.
To get the resources and links from this show, please go to ketowomanpodcast.com/episodes. Please share this podcast with as many people as possible by sharing one of my links or just taking a screenshot of an episode that you enjoyed. Reviews really help raise the profile of the podcast, which gets it in front of more people, but also helps me attract a wide variety of guests. So please take a minute to leave a review on whichever podcast app or platform you like to listen on. It doesn't go unnoticed by me, the people who regularly like, share and comment on my posts. Your support really does mean the world to me. Thank you. Are you enjoying this podcast? Help me make more episodes and videos by making a pledge at my Patreon page, patreon.com/ketowomen, or simply hit the support button on the Keto Woman podcast website. Don't forget to join in the fun on the Keto Woman podcast Instagram and Facebook pages and Daisy_KetoWoman on Twitter. Are you my next extraordinary woman? Maybe you've got an idea for a show, a topic you would like to hear about. Let me know how I can tickle your earbuds by dropping me a line at daisy@ketowomanpodcast.com. This week's end quote had to be from John E. Sarno. There's nothing like a little physical pain to keep your mind off your emotional problems. Bye-bye, keto lovelies.